You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Zondervan, a revered and reliable source for transformative and inspirational content. Support this podcast by visiting zondervan.com and find your next favorite book. Now, on to the show.
Well, welcome into the Invitation Podcast. I am so excited to be here today, you guys. We have a special guest on. I have the pleasure of interviewing my man, Nate Pyle. What's going on, man?
Hey, Luke. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I'm excited to have you on. This is going to be so fun. So for you guys who don't know, Nate is currently pastoring Christ Community Church in Fishers, Indiana. So, I mean, talk to us, man. How do you end up in Fishers, Indiana? Tell us a little bit about the church, your family. Give us the background on Nate Pyle.
Yeah. Well, I actually got here 11 years ago. I'm from West Michigan area, so Holland, Grand Rapids.
My wife is from Granville.
Oh, no way. When I was a youth pastor right after college, I was a youth pastor at a church in Granville, First Reformed of Granville. So I was there for 4.5 years.
No way. That's awesome. Okay. Yeah. So you've been there for 11 years.
Yep. So I got here 11 years ago. My wife and I, we went to a small little college up in West Michigan there called Hope College, graduated from there. We got married almost two years after college for me, a year for her. Like I said, was a youth pastor for 4.5 years. I was doing seminary while I was a youth pastor. And then once I finished up seminary, was really looking for an associate pastor position, and because I didn't think that I'd be able to preach every single week for 20 to 25 minutes a week. I literally could not get an interview as an associate pastor anywhere. Finally found a church that had an opening for an associate pastor, contacted the guy who was helping them in their search process. He said, yeah, I'll put your name in over there, but I'm also working with this church down in Fishers, Indiana that's looking for a lead solo pastor. And I was like, well, I need a job, so let's go look at that. And my wife and I, we entered the process, and they kept putting me through, never got an interview with the other church for the associate position. And we came down here, and quite honestly, we came here and we're like, yeah, this would be we don't know that it's a perfect fit, but we think we'd be here for 3 to 5, right? Like, we didn't have the, oh, God is absolutely calling us. Like, sometimes that happens for pastors, and it wasn't our experience. But what ended up happening was, after being here for about 3 years, we fell in love with the place, we fell in love with the church, and really have since felt like, oh no, God is calling us. And that's been confirmed in a number of different ways. And so, yeah, I'm heading into, well, this summer will be 11 years that I've been here. So yeah, we moved down here. It was just my wife and I. Since then, we had a child who will be 9 in a week. Yeah, in a week, he'll be 9.
Get those gifts, Nate.
That's right. I'm falling behind. And then what led to the book and all of that, we had some infertility issues, and we had an ectopic pregnancy that was really, really difficult. We entered into the adoption process 3 years ago. We adopted our daughter, and then we became that couple that everybody knows who 22 months later had another baby. So,
My gosh. Well, there's so much we got to unpack there. But first, you said something in there that I think is it can be discouraging to the individual going through it, but it's like 2 Corinthians, right? The things you go through comfort others in the things that they're going through. You said that you know, some pastors have these big euphoric moments and they're like, oh my gosh, God's calling me. There's no doubt about it. It's this specific location. God even gave me the coordinates, you know, and all of us are kind of like, I have not had that moment. Like, how are you having that moment? Can you go into that a little bit for some of the people that are listening here that I know are going to be like, how do you make that step when you don't feel like God has said, Nate, do this, or Luke, do this, but it just feels like those are the doors he's opening. Do you have a little insight there for us on that?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. Number one, there was also never a clear no, right? So just as much as we never had the euphoric yes. We also had the, we never had the clear no. And so there was a constant like, okay, well, we'll go through the next step of the process. We'll go through the next step of the process. The other piece of that was there are definitely things that after having been in the church, I grew up in the church and then having worked in a church and been under a pastor and in a situation that was very difficult when I was a youth pastor, there were things that I was looking for. And I never had any of those red flags, right? I mean, no church is perfect. So you're always going to have, well, this could be different or there might be a concern here or whatever, but there was nothing that said this is a deal breaker. And so we just continued in the process. And when we got to the end in it, we had to make a decision because we didn't have the clear sign in the sky. It was, is there any concerns? Is there anything that would be a deal breaker for us? Do we think that we could do good ministry here? And it was an act of faith to step out and to go, yes, we will go, we will accept this, and we will see if God's grace rests on this, which was a little bit unnerving, but it was also one of those like, I'm 28 years old, I can be in a place for 3 to 5 years and survive, and if it doesn't work out, I know that I can move on. So that, I mean, honestly, that was a lot of where our heads were at that point of just looking through and going, we don't see anything that's saying no. And so we're going to continue to move forward because there just comes a point where just like anybody else, we're looking for a job.
Right. Well, and I think the encouraging thing there for the rest of us and maybe for you guys that are listening is you can hear that and go, okay, so, and God has blessed that. God has blessed Nate. You took that step. There's no clear no's. It's not like some unbelievable resounding yes either. And God has blessed that immensely, as we can see from your family and just the church. And so, yeah, I mean,
it actually turned out, I've said this, like, I love my church. I love the people that I get to do ministry with. I love that we're doing life together. It's not perfect by any means, but I also don't, it's been an overly positive experience. And I think God has both blessed, like you said, me and my ministry and my family, and then also the church as well. And we've really come together and have a really, I think, wonderful relationship.
And I love that. So how about your wife? Is your wife's name Sarah, right?
That's correct. Yes. My wife is Sarah. Yeah.
Okay, I told you, I try to do my research over here, not in a creepy way, but in a getting to know you kind of way. So it's that's awesome. So how did Sarah take the move? I mean, that's a big thing for her too. I think, there's some young marrieds on here, some people that are looking to get that way. And, that's a decision you both make together, right?
Yeah. So part of what helped in this is my wife has a very strong sense of discernment, and she from a young age kind of had this sense that she would marry somebody who was in the ministry, and so had accepted that. And then as our relationship progressed and it became clear that that was actually going to be the case, she made a decision pretty early on that, where God called, then she would find her place in that place. And so the move down here, she had very much the same thing of like, yeah, okay, we'll go for 3 to 5 years and then see what might be next. And she's had the same exact experience of falling in love with this place, feeling like the church, and this is so wonderful and it's big for her. The church accepts her as Sarah, not as Nate's wife or not as the pastor's wife. She's Sarah.
That.
And so her gifts are used by the church. There's no expectations like that she's going to do certain things. I think that cultural expectation is changing around pastors' wives, but we definitely experienced that in the 10 years. Like, there's no expectation for what she does other than to be an engaged member of the body.
I love that.
Yeah, it's been really positive for her.
And so in the process of all this, and we'll get to some of your latest works here coming up, but you wrote a book called Man Enough. Without sounding too like straight to the point, why? I'm like, there's so many books on men and stuff like that, but I know why. I've done my research, like I said, I want the people to hear why, because I think it's brilliant.
Well, thank you. So the reason I wrote this is, as you said, there's a lot of books out there on masculinity, and for Christian men, but they all typically fall in one vein with the advocation for a particular kind of man, right? The strong man, the adventuresome man. John Eldridge, Wild at Heart, really is the one that all the other ones are building off of, right? So you got the adventure to find, the thing to conquer, the beauty to save, that type of the idea. And for me, what happened was, So I have always been in athletics. I've always been someone who hunts. I backpack. I downhill ski and backcountry ski and all of that sort of stuff. So I do all of these activities that would fall under being a man. Plus, I've checked a lot of the boxes of being a man. I got married. I had a child. I pastored a I'm pastoring a church and being a leader and all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had an experience when I was in my early 30s where I was on a retreat, and I met with over the course of the retreat, I had this growing sense of loneliness. Like, nobody really knows me, nobody really understands me. And so at the end of the retreat, we had an opportunity to go up to someone and just share what God had kind of awakened in us or made us present to. And so I went up to someone and I said, "Hey, this is I don't know what to do with it, but I have this sense of loneliness." And they're, you know, started asking me the questions like, "Well, why do you think that?" And I said, "Well, because nobody knows me. And why doesn't anybody know me? Because I don't think that if I don't let people get to know me, because if they get to know me, they'll reject me." And then they, you know, they did the turn on that and said, "Well, where else does that show up in your life?" And it became really clear to me, like, oh, that shows up in my relationship with God. Like, I don't bring all of who I am to God because I'm afraid that God will ultimately reject me. And I broke down in that moment and started crying. And then my coach, or the person who was coaching me, began to ask even more questions, like, when did this begin? And was relating it back to the experiences that I had in middle school. And then he looked at me, and I had known this person for a couple of years at this point. He looked at me and he said, "Right now, I feel more connected to you than I ever have over the course of our relationship. And if you continue to live out of this vulnerability, you will feel less like a 13-year-old boy and more like a man." And in the moment I had the like, that's a bunch of pop psychology. But the truth is like, I actually took him up on that and began to live out of that vulnerability and began to let people in and to ask people to help me see parts of myself that I couldn't and the weaknesses that I had been avoiding and all of that sort of stuff. And over the course of months, I began to feel like a man. And so this book really came out of this question of how come I could do all the things that were stereotypical man, right? Like, they're the things that should make me feel like a man. And yet the thing that feels the least manly, being vulnerable and crying and expressing my weaknesses, is actually the thing that got me to feel more confident as a man. And so that's where the book got born out of. And so this idea of, I think, performative masculinity is very, very prominent both in our culture as America, but then also within the church as well. And I try to unpack that and try to get to the point where we as men stop trying to prove that we're men and recognize how countercultural that is to the gospel, where we don't prove anything, right? That God, Christ accepts us regardless of what we've done, separate from our merits, all of that sort of stuff. And in accepting us, deems us as sons. And that is an identity out of which our masculinity should flow.
I love that. That's Hebrews 12. That's one of my favorites right there too. You know, so I love that in your struggle, you're able to recognize that you're a son. But so for our ladies that are listening and are like, "Well, what, you know, how does masculinity conversation help me?" Here's the good news. Nate wrote another book. And this is really the one I want to talk about, because in all seriousness, I think this is not a book that is a good book. I think it's an important book. It can be good and important, but I think more than anything, it's important. Let me just kind of give us a little insight. For you guys who don't know, Nate has a book called More Than You Can Handle. And I think, Nate, just from the things that we've talked about, people seem to have this thing that they like to say, God won't give you more than you can handle. And I think it's a misinterpretation of 1 Corinthians 10:13, right? Where we've got people
absolutely.
No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful and he won't let you be tempted beyond your ability. But there's a whole second part to that verse. And also, you and I think are theological enough to know that God will in fact give you things that you cannot handle. So if you would give us the idea behind the book. You and your wife have had some struggles where maybe you felt like you've had some more than you can handle. Talk to us about this book. I think this is so, so, so critical.
After we had our first child, and we struggled to get pregnant even with our first kid, it took about 14 months or so, which, you know, falls within the normal range, so to speak. But when everybody around you is having kids and they're like timing their pregnancies, it just feels like a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And then when we tried to have another child, really began to have some struggles with infertility. And at about the 18-month mark, we went in and we did all the testing and all of that sort of stuff. And the doctors came back and just said, "Yeah, you know, according to the test, there's no reason you shouldn't be getting pregnant." And so at that point, we had the decisions about out what kind of treatments we wanted to go forward with. We did that for a couple of months, and then we ended up getting pregnant. We got the positive result. But again, my wife having that sense of discernment was just like, something doesn't feel right here. So we went in, we got all the tests done. The doctors came back and they said, hey, we're not 100% sure here, but based on the hormone levels and what we can see, we believe that this pregnancy is ectopic, which means that the embryo did not get implanted in the uterine wall, but rather in the fallopian tube, which means, you know, it's not viable at all.
Right.
And so they said, not only is the pregnancy not viable, but they actually could really harm my wife with the bursting of the fallopian tubes and internal bleeding and all kinds of stuff, with the worst case scenario being, you know, she would die. And so they said, we think you should end the pregnancy. And we were like, well, we can't, you know, based on what we believe, we can't end a pregnancy on, we think, and we need you to be 100% sure. And they were like, well, we just can't do that. So we actually didn't end the pregnancy right then and went home, and we were at home for a few days. And then my wife really started to have some pain and bleeding. And so we went into the hospital, and in the ER, they confirmed that it was. And it was just crazy because it was early enough in the pregnancy. Like, all it took was a shot. They gave her a shot, which basically rolls back the pregnancy. And so that entered that put us into a season of life where it was just really difficult. There was full of questions. There was full of, I'll admit, anger, which I really didn't uncover until later, but anger with God of like, here, we have been praying for this thing for so long, hoping in this thing, and then our hopes get raised only to have the rug pulled out from underneath us. Like, what's going on with this? And I actually had this moment where I was walking through the woods one day. This was just a couple of days after we had left the ER. And I'm walking through the woods trying to clear my mind, and I just stopped at one point, and I had the fist shaking at the sky moment where I literally said out loud, you tell us in your word that you knit us together in our mother's womb, and this child didn't even make it into the womb. That's on you. Yeah, so that kind of just began to define it. And in the process of this, that phrase, God won't give you more than you can handle. Thankfully, no one uttered it to me, but I had heard it enough that it was in the back of my mind. And I just kept thinking, no, absolutely not. Like, this is more than we can handle. Even this whole idea of infertility is more than we can handle. I'm a guy who likes to, you know, if there's a problem, I want to fix it, right? So if my dishwasher breaks, I'm hopping on YouTube to figure out how to repair it. But here's a situation where there's nothing I can do. It's completely out of my control. And I can't handle this. I can't handle the situation. I can't fix it. I can't handle the emotions that I'm feeling right now. And then trying to do this in the midst of pastoring and walking alongside of others, it really is more than I can handle. And I began to really go, okay, where does that come from? And as you said, it comes from 1 Corinthians 10:13 in the misinterpretation of a verse that's clearly about temptation, but now we apply it to all circumstances. And if you go over to 2 Corinthians, I believe it's 1:8-9, Paul begins to talk about the journey that he's been on, the missionary journeys. And he said, like, we had to endure so many hardships that we despaired of life itself. And I'm like, okay, here's Paul, who is the guy who can rejoice in all circumstances, right? He's in jail and he's singing hymns. He's getting beaten for Jesus and he's rejoicing about it and everything. And yet here he says, we despaired of life itself. Wow. Like, if Paul can express that kind of frustration and that sense of despair, then surely it's okay for us. And that's what really led to me walking through this book. And so the book is our story over the next, from the moment of the pregnancy, all the way for the next 3 years, really. And then also it contains a lot of stories about people that I've walked with in the midst of pastoral situations as they walk through really difficult stuff.
That is profound on a number of levels. I think there's such like a – it's difficult to know, you know, what can I handle? And honestly, for the most part, the things that I encounter that are really driving me nuts or to a point of prayer are things that I feel like are more than I can handle, because if I could handle them on my own, I would not be on my knees praying about it.
Well, so, look, first of all, right there, that's the insidious thing about the whole phrase, God won't give you more than you can handle, is it places all of the responsibility to get through the situation on you. Right? You have to handle it.
Exactly.
You have to be the one to fix it. You have to be the one to stand up underneath this. And that's just not biblical at all, right? God doesn't make us rely on our own strength and all this, right? It's when we are weak, then he is strong. But that phrase, God won't give you more than you can handle, says to someone, if you are in a particular situation, God thinks you can handle this and you really don't need him. Right? You're the one who can do this. That's the insidious thing about that phrase and what makes it ultimately unbiblical. We have to allow ourselves to get to a place where we are weak so that Christ can be strong.
Right.
Let's take a quick break to hear from one of our wonderful sponsors.
Yeah.
Struggling to find fresh ideas for date nights with your significant other? Well, we are excited to tell you about the answer to all your date night problems. It's called Night In Boxes. Night In Boxes is all about creating memorable date nights from the comfort of your home. The Night In Boxes team wants to give couples and families an amazing experience to create lasting memories. They even have a way to add faith to your date night to help deepen your relationship with God. This month, they're partnering with this podcast to give away two free boxes if you set up a Date Night In box or a Kids Night In box for the 6 or 12-month subscriptions. Trust me, it is going to be worth it. Each Date Night In a box includes interactive activities with ambiance and a tasty treat to bring you together in meaningful ways. Go to datenightinbox.com and use code CONVERGE at checkout to access the $79 discount when you sign up for a 6 or 12-month subscription and gain a fresh way to date your significant other. That's datenightinbox.com. Visit today. Marriage is your most sacred relationship on this earth, and prayer is the single most powerful way to transform it. Have you heard of Mark Batterson's book, The Circle Maker? Over 1 million prayer lives have been changed through The Circle Maker. Now marriages can benefit from this teaching as well. It's time to learn the relational truths in the legend of Honi the Circle Maker, a man bold enough to draw a circle in the sand and not leave it until God answered his impossible prayer. Honi's prayer saved a generation, and your prayers can transform your relationship. Praying circles around your marriage draws from the life-changing principles Mark Batterson outlines in his New York Times bestseller, The Circle Maker. This new book is available everywhere you buy books. Go check it out. Now, back to the show.
You didn't see it, thank God, personally, where anyone's coming up to you and saying, hey, this isn't more than you can handle. But on a pastoral level, I'm wondering, have you seen that phrase really harm some people in just the way that they go about their life and their relationship with God, you know, where they really feel like that's something that is a truth?
Yeah, I have. And I think that that phrase has been around in Christian circles for so long that people have internalized it. And so people will feel like they have to, you know, just get through situations. They feel like they can't be weak. They can't allow others to into their struggles. And they don't feel like it's safe for them to actually be honest about their doubts and stuff. So I have definitely seen folks under the weight of that ideology of God won't give you more than you can handle, therefore I must handle this. I must grit my teeth and get through this. And they don't really allow others to come around side of them, and they don't allow themselves to be fully honest with God. That's how I see it playing itself out.
So what's your prayer with this book then? What are you really hoping for the people that read this book and, you know, how God moves in their life is, you know, as a resource to help them understand his word better, you know, who he is, his character? What's your prayer for us, Nate?
Yeah, my prayer is I think that so often when people are walking through difficult situations that they're looking for an explanation. They want to know why they're going through this. They want to know, like, is there something I did to deserve this, right? Or how is God going to redeem this? What good could come out of it, right? This is what we so often want, because there's also this idea, which is a good idea, that God redeems and restores, right? And so I think people want that, and they want it in the form of an explanation, because we are a society that likes things explained. My prayer is that we would begin to let go of that, because God never promises us an explanation. There's nowhere in the Bible where God promises to explain to us the reasons behind evil, behind suffering, behind injustice. Instead, what God promises us is that he will be with us, that he will wipe every tear from every eye, that he will redeem and restore. And so my prayer is that people would really latch onto that promise, and that they would begin to open themselves up, let go of the desire for an explanation, because ultimately that's not our deepest desire. Our deepest desire is to know that God sees us, cares for us, and was with us. And so my hope, my prayer is that people would begin to be opened up to that and would actually begin to experience that by being given permission to be honest about how life is more than they can handle.
That's so good. I think there's so many people that are listening to this that even those things that, you know, the rest of the world might seem as minuscule, you know, I try not to compare people's pain. You know, your infertility is no less really difficult than someone else's thing that they're going through or someone else's thing that they're going through. I think there's so much in this book that is going to be life-giving for people. And so I'm excited for everybody to be able to get their hands on a copy of this and really read about what God has put on your heart, because ultimately I think it's going to bring healing to a lot of people that are going through similar things. They've just manifested themselves in different ways. So yep. Nate, tell us what is next for you. Where can we be looking for this? You know, we're going to put all this stuff in the notes, people, but I want to hear what's next for the church. For you personally, where can we be finding you to follow you and make sure that we're up to date on everything coming out with more than you can handle and things of that nature?
Yep. So people can find me online on pretty much all the major social media channels. So I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. My Instagram and my Twitter are at NatePyle79. Pyle is P-Y-L-E. You can also go to my website, NatePyle.com. And then, book can be anywhere books are sold. You can get it. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, your local bookstore. Go ahead and have them order it or whatever. Support them. That's great. So you can get it anywhere like that. What's up next for me? You know what? I've been here 11 years and I am so grateful. I have a sabbatical coming up this summer, which couldn't be timed more perfectly. So I got a sabbatical coming up and I'll be off all summer long and got some really great plans for me and my family. But really my goal and is really to do a couple of things. Number one, to be present to God's renewal of all things. And so we have a lot of activities as a family set up to help us get really present to how God is constantly renewing the world around us and renewing our relationships and ultimately renewing his relationship with us. So we got that going on. And then also just for me personally is like evaluating, okay, I'm 11 years into ordained pastoral leadership and ministry. What's the next 10 years going to look like and how do I want to structure that ministry? And so, and now that I've got these two books, trying to discern what's coming next. So that's a big thing. Those are the big things. There's also a possibility of me starting a podcast coming up and information about that will be up on social media channels and my website as well.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, here's the good news. You guys are going to want to tune into that podcast when it comes out, the book, everything to do with that. And then, hey, the good news is, I think for you, but maybe not for the rest of us, is we won't be hearing tons from you coming up here soon. So everybody needs to get on it now because by the absolute grace of God, he will not be on anything for a minute so he can rest with his family, which is totally well-deserved. Nate, thank you so much for being on the Invitation Podcast. It has been so good to have you. And I cannot thank you enough for writing this book, man. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Luke. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no worries, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Thanks for listening to The Invitation with Luke Lauzon. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. For more information about this show, visit convergepodcastnetwork.com. With so many podcasts to choose from, we're glad you chose to tune in today. We'd like to invite you to listen to one of our other Converge podcast partners. Head in the Clouds with Ryan Romeo is all about having a dream or calling to serve God, but then daily putting it into action and drawing inspiration on the journey. Great encouragement for those looking to do big things for God. Subscribe today to Head in the Clouds with Ryan Romeo in your favorite podcasting app.